Mother Contract Act asks the woman to give up that right before the birth of the child. Does that answer your question?
So what you're saying is that the you're really saying that it, that there is a change, that if they sign the contract before the baby is born, then there's no waiting period or anything else. If the mother decided to give the child up immediately after adoption, she has some time to change her mind in this sort of way.
Please proceed, if, or unless.
Did you not want me to read the testimony? Is
that... No, I didn't say it that way.
Okay, you prefer that I not?
Well, I think the members have had a chance to go over it. Well, the questions have been asked. Okay. If there are any more points that you haven't said out loud that you think are absolutely necessary on behalf of Senator Hill, please do it.
I think everything that we'd like to say is included in the bill, and I understand you're going to hold another hearing on this bill.
We will have another hearing at the request of Representative Bunn, who will then, as I understand it, then be speaking to the bill. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Bellamy.
Could I ask Bob Castagna a question now?
Sure. Come on back up, Mr. Castagna.
I would assume that the Catholic Conference is opposed to this on the grounds of the, let me turn around a different way. Would the Catholic Conference be opposed to a woman giving her baby up for adoption after the baby was born for money?
I guess I'd, for the record, Mr. Chair, Bob Castagna, Oregon Catholic Conference, I guess I'd have to know a little bit more about the factual circumstances. If the woman were pregnant before any contact had been made with the couple and the couple had decided that they wanted to help her bear the expenses of having that child and would choose to pay for her medical expenses, I don't think there'd be any objection if she were willing voluntarily to give that child up for adoption because she could not raise that child as she would like to.
Okay.
And I don't think there'd been any objection there.
Okay.
We don't want to get into buying and selling people, for one thing, or arrange for the production of people just as one might produce a commodity.
Okay. What about in the case of the, and I don't know if this is legal, but I assume that it's done. In a private adoption, the medical fees could be somewhat in excess of what the actual medical fees are, which, in other words, I would suspect in private adoptions that there could be some sort of fee exchanged.
There's Representative Bellamy. Let me just comment on that. There was a bill, Senate Bill 137, I believe, in 1985. Senator Hamby introduced that was materially amended, dealt with where the line is that you're talking about. We tried to deal with that last session and make the kind of thing that you're describing, anything excess, not legal.
Okay. So the your objections to the Catholic Conference objections is more of the objections of the agreement before the pregnancy occurs for the production of a child for money.
Right. It is taking the procreative act outside of the relationship of the husband and the wife and injecting a third party into that procreative activity, which is objectionable. And doing it for money adds a commodity purchase type aura to the arrangement.
I think now I'm beginning to get to the point that I want to ask you. Is it the contract that the conference would object to, or is it the third party entering into the procreative relationship that the conference would more object to, or is it both?
I think there are elements of both involved.
I would just point out, and I think this bill and this issue raise a lot of unusual circumstances. I suppose technology has brought us to, like Senator Hamby was a main sponsor of prohibition of, one would say, baby selling last session in 1985, and I see her name as a sponsor on this bill. So I guess it's not easily distinguishable, and when you say elements of both, I think there are people that object to the selling concept that support the contractual agreement, and it's a difficult one to iron out the policy issues on.
No, they're extremely difficult. You know, one of the things that would enter into an element of concern is the use of women for commodity protection type basis. I mean, that we find inherently objectionable.
However, there are political viewpoints which say a woman should be entitled to use her body the way she sees fit in these matters.
Right, and I think that legal argument, whether it be right to privacy or right to control one's body, has a line drawn on it on a policy basis and at an ethical basis when one asks if that is an absolute right or whether or not there is a societal interest in drawing certain limits to that right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I would think the Catholic Conference has quite a few positions already established on the right for a woman to use her body as she wishes.
Mr. Chair, if I might, in kindness, respond to Representative Bellamy, the dignity and sanctity of human life is the cornerstone for the Church's position on all its issues.
And yet, under these arrangements to promote, one would say, the legality of a surrogate mother contract, couldn't that be interpreted as the promotion of the dignity of life?
Again, it's those elements of involving that third party, those contractual arrangements, which cast a negative ethical or moral judgment on the production of life.
Further questions? We will have this up for public hearing again. And thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else signed up today? We have Willamette Law Professor Kathy Graham signed up to testify in the public hearing on this bill. And apparently she's got a class and she'll be in and out of here. I appreciate everybody bearing with us so that we take her when she comes and is here for a half an hour or 45 minutes. But I'll close the hearing for the time being. Council will remind me when Professor Graham comes in. And we'll close the hearing on 3307 and open it on House Bill 2898. Council, can you tell us what's in our packet on this before I ask Representative Bellamy to proceed? Tell us what it is first.
This is the bill that changes it relates to the Abuse Prevention Act. And in front of you, you have a set of amendments, which are 2898-2, and then a hand and gross bill, which reflect those amendments. These amendments are a result of Representative Bellamy's amendments last time, -1, with changes he made orally at the meeting.
The hand engrossed is, do that again, Council. 2898-2.
is a set of amendments, and behind it should be the hand-engrossed version 2898, and it has...
And that hand-engrossed incorporates 2898-2.
Right. The committee wanted a hand-engrossed version for clarity when you're working on the bill.
What else do we have in our packets relating to that? Linda Zuckerman's letter saying it'll cost $133,000 if we keep Section 4 in the original bill?
And I believe that's it.
That's one we took out with dash 2, or we will.
I think we will, yes.
Bill, you want to refresh our memories on where we're at?
Yes, and as soon as I get through the hand-engrossed version, I'll give this to Linda and make sure that we took it out. So she, if you will notice on the hand-engrossed version, we're basically putting in the 180 days back to 30, and line 21, 22, we're taking out the reference to marital annulment, dissolution, separation, and we're restoring the language up above. On page 2, and I'm going to go through quickly because we've gone through this once before.
Right.
Page 2, we're restoring some language and in section 3. It's taking out some language that we had in terms of a hearing. And down in section 4, we took out the language, all evidence taken and considered at the hearing must be upon oath and affirmation.
And that's the language.
Is that the language that takes care of the part of the fiscal impact? We never take care of all of it. And then we get to page 3. Page 3 says, temporary custody order of the minor children of the petitioner be awarded to the petitioner. And then you will notice it is subject to reasonable visitation rights of the non-custodial parent, which the court shall order unless such visitation is not in the best interest of the child. We restored the language down below, but we put in the term with additional bodily harm. And this was for the section that they claim there was threat. Okay, we added in the language of what happens if they don't complete the form correctly on page 3, on page 4, and on page 5. You get to some of the other changes. Most of these changes now is to tell whether or not there is a... when we get to the where there's quite a bit of writing, it's to tell whether or not there is a divorce pending, and the county in which it's filed, and this sort of thing. That's on the next page, Judy, I think. Next page. There, this one. That's just when we took out that there is no marital annulment, dissolution, or separation. Now we're just giving them the opportunity to tell us whether or not there is a proceeding going on and which county. Then when we go to the next one, you will notice that we've added in reasonable visitation rights unless the visitation is not in the best interest of the child, right here and here. And that's depending on whether or not there's a divorce file and whether or not they grant it. We do things twice. Then on page 8 is the judge then tells specifies what the visitation rights will be. And then you'll notice on page 6 it's the same thing. One has to do with, it's once again where one has to do with one part, and if you don't do the other part, the judge has to fill it in the next spot. Then we go to page 9, and page 9 we're restoring the language about your request must be made within 30 days after you receive these papers, except that a request relating to child custody may be made at any time. And I assume that's okay. I've not heard anybody objecting to that. And we restore some things on page 11, which is basically numbers.
Wait a minute.
Next to the last page.
Okay.
Next to there, I guess it's the only thing I see is a couple of number changes. And then on the very last page, on page 12 of the hand-engrossed version, We have within 30 days after the restraining order is served under this section, we removed some language so it says the respondent may request a court hearing upon any relief granted if such a relief, a request is made, and it must be to the clerk of the court. No, if such request is made, period. We're restoring some of that language. Not a great substantive change in that part. Mr. Chair, I have decided to not deal with the temporary custody order, and I do not plan on dealing with it in full committee. I think that we'll get it out of the House committee and get it over to the Senate, and at that point I'm going to let Deschutes County people come in and plead their case in front of a body that has not dwelt on this as long as we have. Maybe they'll see a better solution than I can find. I can't find one, so I'm not going to do anything. And I think we've done enough good work on the bill not to, at this point, just stop the whole thing. And I am going to write a letter to the Deschutes County Bar Committee, or whatever they call themselves. Is that what it's called? And request that they consider changing their mediation rules as it relates to temporary custody. Because we did identify that one of the real problems in Deschutes County is their mediation rules. Although I do have concerns, statewide there is abuse being used of the act for temporary custody. With that, Mr. Chairman, if the committee is ready for a motion, I'm ready to present it.
Representative Bellamy moves 2898-2 to the original printed bill, and I'll place that motion. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered, and dash 2 is...
Mr. Chairman, and I might add that I assume that that's okay. There was one... I thought I noticed one thing in the amendments that might possibly be not correct. If that's true, and when it didn't make sense.
Why don't you point it out right now?
Are you talking about that last language?
Is that?
I don't know. I don't know what you mean.
Bill, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we never could understand why they were doing that last language. Remember that? Yes.
I don't know what you're referring to. What page?
Page 3 of the Dash 2 Amendment. What line, Bill?
6 through 11. But does anybody know why they're changing to be the last page of your handed gross measure? It says, within 30 days after a restraining order is served under this section, the respondent therein may request a court hearing upon any relief granted if such a request is made.
Except that a request, this
one? Over
here?
No, it's from here on.
No, it's from line 14 through the end on page 3 of the Dash 2 amendments. Is that what you're talking about, Bill?
Really, from line 10 on.
Well, let's take it apart right now.
I don't. Do you know what they're talking? Ira seems to know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
maybe he could help.
Come forward and identify
yourself.
Basically,
if such request is made, is
Ira.
Part of the next sentence. I will.
Ira, who are you for the record?
Right. Ira Zarrow, representing the Oregon Coalition Against Sexual and Domestic Violence. Essentially, that little clause is part of the first of the next sentence. It's the introductory clause of the next sentence. It's just a question of punctuation rather than, if such a request is made, the clerk of the court will, if that's how it should read. So, does that work? I think that it should.
Do it again. For those of us that are slow.
Okay, basically it would read, the sentence would end, the next sentence should begin with the clause, if such request is made, the clerk of the court will, and then whatever it is they will be doing.
Okay. Do you know why they changed this, Ira?
No, I don't. It's, I assume it's an error of some
kind. Why don't I check with that before it gets to full committee, Mr. Chair? It may be just such the Legislative Council says this is a better way of saying it.
Yeah, I think it's just a punctuation thing.
I don't have any, I don't recollect any substantive reason to why this would be changed, but then I'll ask counsel between now and full committee.
Please, and we'll send it on to full committee, and if it's necessary, Bill, will you make sure that we have an LC amendment in proper form for full committee to deal with that?
Okay.
Virginia, any comment?
No.
Are we, Mr. Chair, are we going to pass this out subject to, Mayor, are you going to entertain a motion to pass this to full committee subject to Representative Bellamy?
No, not even subject to.
Oh, no, just, we're yes. I think everything is done.
We're all amended.
We're all amended, and okay. I'll check on why.
We're going to amend the amendment.
Representative Bellamy, you have a motion to make.
I think you've already placed it.
No, we adopted the amendment.
Oh, yes. I will move House Bill 2898 to the full committee as amended.
Representative Bellamy moves House Bill 2898 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Will you call the roll, please?
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Dix?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye. The motion is adopted, and Bill, get that amendment if needed.
Yeah, and we can, for staff reasons, we can schedule this one fairly quickly because that's not going to take very long if there is an amendment needed.
So we'll close the work session on 2898 and open it up on 2542. Catherine, would you describe the bill, the status, and any amendments that we have before us?
Okay.
Please.
This bill relates to the suspension of driving privileges for those up to the age of 17 years who are convicted of crimes involving possession or use of alcohol or drugs. The bill itself would change the effective age up to age 20. It extends the sanctions of a loss of a license to those youngsters who are also convicted of driving offenses. It allows occupational licenses to be issued. It allows expungement of the record when the driving privileges are restored. It prohibits insurance companies from using suspension as a rating factor when pricing insurance. We have three sets of amendments. Set number one was proposed by the Juvenile Rights Project. It changes shall to may suspend, so it gives the judge discretion on whether or not the license should be suspended. It narrows the bill's application by restricting to suspension to those kids involved in a driving offense. And then it also deletes the insurance section from there because it would not be needed under those circumstances.
Counsel, I hate to interrupt. I lost you on the insurance section.
Okay, on this particular bill, if we adopted the Juvenile Rights Amendment, only driving offenses or offenses where a car was involved, use of a motor vehicle was involved, would be subject to suspension of license. And because of that, what it says in the bill itself is, yeah, it would limit release or using the rating information to when an automobile
Thank
is
you.
Used. Okay, set number two was addressing concerns about expungement, and it deals with it in a different way and also adjusts the ages to deal with the age change in the bill from 17 to 20. Set number three, which is labeled staff amendments, restores the age in the original bill back to 17 and adds language to address the expungement issue and also accommodate the problem. The problem that we had with the expungement issue was the bill itself.
Counsel, yes. You're going on with all these dashes and dashes, and the only thing I've got here is dash one and hand engrossed. And I guess
dash two is attached to hand engrossed.
It's attached to the, behind the Hinton Gross version, and then I believe dash three, which is labeled staff, is also in your packet.
Okay.
Oh, would you like to see mine?
Okay.
There's dash three. It isn't dash three. It's labeled staff. It's the third set of amendments. It's labeled staff up at the top.
Okay.
And there should be a Hinton Gross version attached to it. Okay?
Okay.
There is a fiscal impact statement, which is also in front of you. It says that there would be an additional cost of $25,000, but that the cost would be offset by fees for occupational licenses and also for reinstatement fees.
Let me ask a... question. Dash... three accomplishes restoring the 17-year-old language and then deals with the expunction issue. Is that right?
Correct.
It's not dash three, though. It's something that was drafted by staff at my request.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Let me explain the
expungement
problem.
Please do. There is an expungement problem that was brought to the committee's attention.
The problem.
I think, counsel, if you would explain the problem and then explain the solution.
The problem is the bill makes reference to what happens when the child commits the first offense and provides a remedy, and then talks about the second offense and provides a remedy. If the first offense were expunged, there would be no way to know that a second offense had occurred. And the way we dealt with that is to not allow the expungement to occur until after the child is older, is 18, in which case he could or she could not again be cited under this section. So in order to have expungement, we'd have the child reach 18 and the license would be reinstated.
The dash one amendments, counsel, why are they here? At whose request?
The Juvenile Rights Project.
And the dash two amendments were, as I understand it, basic general direction from the original committee discussion.
Correct. To deal specifically with the expungement issue and to correct the issue around, to expungement as related to the change in age.
And the dash three, which are the staff amendments dated 4787 were prepared by you directly at my request.
Correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Does the dash two amendments, section two, which dealt, I assume, with the expungement, is that correct? There's about four pages of it.
Yes, because it goes into the expungement statute. In the expungement statute, it said that something, I'll paraphrase, but it says something to the effect that on the first offense, your license is suspended.
Let me interrupt you. Okay. You think in the staff analysis, you've taken care of that process. You've just done it differently with the dash three.
Correct. What I haven't dealt with is if you make the age change, we also need to change...
Mr.
The dash three. Dash two is redundant to three.
Okay.
Yeah. Representative Bellamy?
Well, I'm ready for a motion.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but if adopted, the dash one amendments would change the law as was originally conceived and passed. Is that?
Yes.
And
I believe that's correct.
And maybe counsel or the chair or Representative Bellamy or someone could fill me in why. What was the problem with the age, as is written in the bill?
I will. Let me speak to that, because the dash three amendments are the ones that I support and ask to be drafted. And let me just address the age. From my point of view, as is the law now, it dealt with those who were under 18, and that's the way it's presently written, and this bill was originally drafted to raise that to under 21. My personal preference on that is that someone who is age 18 is a grown-up in this society for the purposes of voting, for the purposes of almost all, for the purposes of going to into the military if necessary, under conscription. I'm not a supporter of treating those grown persons that have reached legal age in this state for many, almost all purposes of being treated the way and for the purposes the 809.260 was, as is the law now. So I would oppose the raising the age to age 20. Council, did you have a comment?
There was also another issue, and that was whether or not it was constitutional to create two separate classes of juveniles, those under 17 who were subject to the law and those up to 21 who were not. Last week or 2 weeks ago, the Court of Appeals came down with an opinion